You can keep up with all the episodes of the Journalism Salute by checking out our newsletter. The link is at the bottom of the show notes. Hope you'll subscribe. And let us know where you're listening from and what you think of the podcast. Email us at journalismsalute@gmail.com. Thank you. Hi and welcome to the Journalism Salute. I'm Mark Simon. In each episode, we'll talk to or about an interesting person or organization related to journalism. The intent is to show that journalists are not the enemy of the people. Thank you for listening. On this episode, we're joined by Ido Autini. Ido and her husband, Makia, run the website The Datekeepers. This online platform operates under the idea that stories move mountains and that we need to see better stories about humanity and people overcoming extraordinary odds to make contributions to the world. I should note that Ido is blind. She has a degree in applied linguistics from Mohammed V University in Rabat, Morocco, and a master's in journalism and strategic media from the University of Arkansas. She's writing a book, Blindness is the Light of My Life. Her backstory is remarkable. Hi, Ida.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
So normally I ask a very specific journalism question first, but I want to go back through your biography to begin. Can you just share your biographical story taking us through your youth and adolescence in Morocco and what happened to you?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much. So I was born and raised in Morocco. I am an indigenous Moroccan. My story is quite unusual, even to me, a person who has lived it. There are a lot of things that didn't happen to me until very late in my life, including education. I was born and raised in the middle of nowhere, with no access to technology, running water, electricity, or anything. So how would someone think if they hear that I am now a journalist? We had no access to podcasts, magazines, newspapers, televisions, nothing. But we had one thing. It was oral storytelling. The Berbers, or Amazigh, as they are known, are the native Moroccans. They are known for their abilities for storytelling. As a kid, I loved stories. Of course, I didn't have a name for them. I had no idea that even a thing as a school was a possibility for me. Both of my parents died when I was very young. I had to move a lot between my families. Unfortunately, both my father and my mother's side of the family did not want me for some reason. So at the age of 17, I was blinded by a family member. And believe it or not, that was the first time I started school. Before 17, I didn't know how to read and write. I didn't even know how to count from 1 to 2. Like, I had no idea. When my teacher asked me, how do you spell your name? And I said, I don't really spell it. You don't have to. I just thought that was the best answer. I'd get out of it. And I don't have really to worry about spelling my name. That was 2007. And I was, like, as I said, not only not educated, but I didn't speak languages. Now I speak 7 languages. English is the 7th. So sorry if there's a little bit of a challenge. But when I started school, of course, because of my age, there were a lot of challenges. And one of those challenges was that I couldn't start from the first grade. Like, you cannot have a 17-year-old woman in the first grade. That just doesn't work. So I was given a one choice only to take a 6th grade test. And if I passed, I am lucky. I'll go straight to the 7th grade. If I didn't, I would just stay uneducated. I was lucky. I passed the test. And when I went to school, I knew that was the only opportunity for me to change my life. And then, of course, go to change the world and make the world a better place and help tell the stories of people like myself, something that we're going to get into later. But I graduated from high school in the span of a little bit less than 6 years. and went to the university, studied English literature for my associate degree, and then went to Mohammed Five University, where I studied applied linguistics. Of course, when I was in the hospital, my family abandoned me. I had to endure 6 years of homelessness, which was very challenging. But also, I was at the time very determined, and I had dreams and goals. And one of those dreams is to work for the UN, the other to go to the US and to become a journalist. And all of those dreams have come true. So that's the summary of my life, basically, some of it.
That's a lot there. Who, I guess, I don't know if this is the right word, but who rescued you?
So you mean from homelessness, right?
Yes.
It was an American couple to whom I am grateful. When someone told them about me, they said, this woman has a lot of potential and she's hardworking and she wants to learn, and why not help her? So they were the ones who rescued me from homelessness and also like helped me to go to the American Language Center, where I learned English, and to go to the university and basically learned language and American culture and like the person I am today.
How were you able to pick up things so fast?
I love languages. And as I said earlier, as a kid, there's one thing that I really didn't understand, but also I didn't like. So I loved stories. And because I was deprived of my mother at an early age, I didn't have really a loving person, like someone who loved me as a kid. So I was very addicted to stories. And like, if there was no one to tell my story or no one to tell story to, I'd hold stories to animals and trees and just going around and telling stories. And when I went to school, I decided that journalism is what I wanted to study. And yeah, so that's my basically, I am passionate about what I do, because it's, I guess, part of me being who I am.
And where are you based now?
I am now in Kansas City, Missouri.
And who are the people that have most been influential in your development as a writer towards becoming a Fulbright scholar, starting the Datekeepers, all these different things that you're doing now?
It's really hard to even narrow down like the 10 or even 50. There have been a lot of people who have supported me all the way. But for example, when I was in school, I didn't have assistive technology. I didn't have access to screen readers or like talking devices. So my French teacher, who himself is a journalist, was the one reading out loud to me. And also my science teacher, she bought me a portable radio and like read stories out loud, recorded them, and was very patient for me to come and tell her stories, everything that I read. And my husband also happens to be a writer and has been very supportive and patient with me. Sometimes being a multilingual is great, but not when you are tired or sleepy. Your writing just sometimes is like, wow, what are you trying to say? And my husband is like, as I said, one of the people who have supported me all the way since we've been friends for almost 7 years now. I also am grateful to a mentor and friend, Stephen Franklin, who is based in Chicago and has worked as a journalist all over the world.
I want to run through some of the work that you've done, but first I want to explain, what's the purpose of the Datekeepers?
Yeah, so the Datekeepers is an international media platform. We have a few things that we do, but the purpose is to give opportunities for people to tell their stories And for nonfiction writers and journalists to have the opportunity to publish, but also to have the support that not many places offer, like long-term mentorship, editorial feedback, and guaranteed to publish whatever, like however many pieces that a writer is willing to put their time into, but long-term mentorship and also access to writers and journalists from all over the world. We also have a page where we promote collaborators and friends of the Datekeepers, and that is very something that is very personal to me, because I was a nobody right before I became the person I am today. I was invisible, and I want to help give people visibilities and highlight their work and celebrate their accomplishment with our international audience.
I'm looking at the stories that you've done. You write a lot of profiles. There's one on an astrobiologist, a pollution fighter, a foreign services officer. But I'm interested in one that you co-wrote with your husband. I love the headline. Thinker, toiler, sportsman, spry. Blind cricketer Sunny Gulkar is changing India and the world. Can you introduce us to who he is and what it was like to profile someone else who was blind?
So Sono, I met him actually online, is a blind person who plays cricket, blind cricket specifically. And he also is like me. He went through a lot. He is from a small tribe in India. He lost his sight at a certain age and had to basically be disoriented for a while because of what life, like the barriers that he had to overcome and poverty. And then, of course, he educated himself and now has a healthy, loving family relationship. And not only that, he is a blind cricketer, but also he is working on becoming a politician, to be the first blind politician in a higher position in the Indian government, so that he can actually help the government give the best support to the blind community. In his words, Sono says, "We are the ones who know what we need, and we are the ones who know what things will help us." So that's Sono's background and story.
What was it like to write about another blind person?
It was fun. It was different than others, especially with, of course, not only blindness, but with limited English. So we had to use translation when I was messaging him and fact-checking. And we used a friend who interviewed him and helped translate it into English. And that actually is not only with Sonu, but also with Usama from Palestine. Sonu's profile took about like 5 months to finish. Usama's profile was like a whole year, because it was like from like his Palestinian dialect, Arabic dialect, to standard Arabic and then to English. So I love working in these profiles, not because, like, as I said, the subject is a blind person like me, but the challenges are totally different. And of course, I have never been on that side where I am interviewed for like a media platform in a language that I don't speak or read or write, if that makes sense.
Yep. So mm-hmm. You do essays and commentaries too, both for Datekeepers and for other sites.
Yes.
I was reading one last night that you did for Ability Magazine. Can you explain what a remittance is and what it was like to write about that? As that, I felt like that had some sort of a personal connection for you.
Yeah, remittances is basically, everyone I'm sure has heard about how immigrants feel obligated sometimes and or like with shame or whatever it is to send money back home. When I was back in Morocco, I myself had the idea that anyone living in the Western world, specifically US, has a lot of money. And if you want $50,000, you've got to reach out to them. It's really easy. Like, there was no way for me to understand that someone living in the US, for example, has responsibilities to, you know, pay their rent, mortgage, utilities. Like, I didn't think about what that person has to do with money. They just have it. They have to send it abroad. And when I came to the US, of course, you know, I ended up on the other side of the story, where I myself had to try to send money to my friends back home. No matter how much, it always wasn't enough. And I started speaking with my friends who are immigrants here. Some of them are even children of immigrants who still have to do that. And the struggle that we face when we say no or we can't. For example, when I told my friend, at the time I was a Fulbright scholar and I had a very limited income, it was enough for me, but not too much to just send it to whoever wanted it. And I was saying, my rent is $600. And my friend was saying, wow, but you get $1,300. So it's a challenge that a lot of immigrants in the US specifically have to face, to send money back home. And no matter how much they send, it always is not enough.
What was it like to write about that?
It was very, when I was writing about it, it was a normal, because it's a topic that I am passionate about. But after I published it, there were a lot of people who relate, who were messaging me and saying, thank you. I wish I talked to you before. Let me know if you are planning to write about this again. It helped me, but also helped other people to know that they are not alone.
So you've done a fair number of interviews, and I'm curious, how do you find that people on the other side react to you? Do you think that some people might be more willing to open up to you because of who you are and your circumstances?
Sometimes, there are different people react different way. I think it was once I worked as a journalist in Morocco, and I was wanting to interview a woman about why lentils were expensive, and she was not happy with that. But that was the only time I had the subject be really hard to navigate. But people open up to me. I think because I am a blind, and it makes people feel not threatened, but they forget that I am a journalist. And sometimes they tell me things that they wouldn't tell anybody else, because there's not eye contact, right? There's not fear of, you're looking at my face now because I'm saying something that I've never told anyone before. It's a safe environment. I guess I represent a safe environment for them. But for me, that's great, but to a point, because sometimes I don't feel comfortable when I am the first journalist to hear a story. I have to always make sure that they're telling me something that they are actually comfortable.
I'm of the impression that when someone loses one of their senses, their other senses are heightened. Have heightened senses ever been important for you when working on a story?
I think not because of a loss, but for example, I am totally blind. I don't even have light perception. I have to focus using specifically listening, because I use a screen reader, which is a text-to-speech software that reads out loud. And if I, for example, skip a word or a sentence or a line, then, of course, the meaning might change, or I might get some details wrong. So I have to focus using my listening skills. And I've had to work on that. I don't think it just, I also work on touching skill, because I read Braille and I love reading Braille. I even once read Braille using my lips and my tongue because I thought, how about if I don't actually have my fingers? So, but I think I've developed the other senses by kind of forcing them to focus or to double focus, if that makes sense.
You read Braille with your lips and your tongue? What was that like?
It was fun. It was actually, my teacher wanted, we had a student who was left-handed, and my teacher was really frustrated with that. And I thought, if you have a left hand, it's better than nothing. But how about if you have no hand? Like, what would you do? And in reaction to that, I decided to read with my lips and my tongue, and I did just fine. I actually read a story of a blind person who doesn't have hands, and he types with his nose.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what are the stories that you've done that you're most proud of?
I am proud of a lot of things I've done, but the main one is a story of a disability historian, Mark Bookman. Mark was a friend, a mentor, and the most compassionate, passionate, and loving person I've ever met. He also was a Fulbright scholar, and he lived in Japan until his death on December 16th of 2020. When I met Mark, I was interviewing him, and he was very passionate, like very patient. We interviewed him, and it took 3 hours. He loved everything he was doing, and his profile was the one I am really proud of, but the hardest one to work on, because he suddenly died in his apartment in Japan. Mark was suffering with a rare disease, which of course led to his death. And he was working to make the world a better place. And he always would tell me, we're going to sleep when we die. So he was in Japan and always would meet me whenever I wanted to. And of course, we both love working a lot and used to meet at like 4 a.m. And he would say like, oh, today I've been typing from 4 a.m. to 6 p.m. So let's not, like in emails, let's not be professional. And it was a profile that, like as I said, took a long time. It's the longest one both my husband and I have worked on. And it makes me proud because it's a way to make Mark's memory alive and make his work visible to people from all over the world.
You've mentioned a few times that stories took you a long time, that interviews took you a long time. What is the process of writing like for you? Like, what are all the different things you do?
Well, it depends. Like, if it's a profile, basically, I reach out to the person. They ask questions about what exactly I want to focus on. And for me, when, like, the main thing, especially for the datekeepers, is to highlight persons that the accomplishment, but also what things they had to overcome before becoming the person they are today. So I interview them, transcribe the interview, and then, of course, an outline, and work on it that way. Depending on the story, some of them take like 3 drafts, I guess the easiest ones. Some of them like 9 drafts, 10
wow.
drafts. Yeah, but I love writing, and I love what I do, so I don't get tired of them. I've heard a lot of writers like struggle with working on a project for a long time. I've been working on my memoir for 10 years, so it has taught me a lot of patience.
Okay, how do you come up with your story ideas?
If it's like an op-ed, I have read a lot. I love reading. And I think that because I was very late to go to school, and when I use the were tasted, when I tasted the yumminess, the power of education, I love reading. So I am well-versed in topics that I write about. I also love learning and I love challenges. So I don't feel comfortable if I don't have a challenge, at least one challenge a day. So the topics I write about, if I don't know about them, I love doing research, meeting people who are working on those areas and learning from them. And as I said, reading about different topics and learning about different cultures and subjects.
What's the hardest part of the job?
The hardest part of being a journalist is that there's not enough time to write all the stories. That, like, I don't sleep much. I am lucky. I don't encourage people not to sleep. That's not something I do. I actually had to read a book about why we sleep, and I found out that 5% of the world's population operate perfectly on like 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and I just happen to be one of those people. So I work on a lot of stories, and I'm like, I wish I could do like 50 stories. Like, I want to expend, well, it's impossible to expend time, but I want to be able to write as many stories as possible and tell as many stories as possible.
What's the best part?
The best part is that I get to meet people from different backgrounds. I get to learn about challenges that are different than mine. Like, as I said, for example, a profile of Mark, I learned about what it means to struggle physically, not to be able to even grab your own computer, but still write a book and produce a documentary, right? I learned from Sono not how to play cricket, but like that someone who is blind could do different things. I learned from people who, for example, one thing that I was, it was not challenging, but it took me a long time to be okay with the fact that my parents died, is that talking to people as a journalist has taught me that sometimes you might have parents and they might not be good after all. So learning from people and learning from reading and writing stories is one of the best.
Do you ever get, like, what do you do when you're frustrated? How do you manage your mental health?
Read, listen to some pop music, have fun with family or friends, and remember that I love what I do and it's worth whatever it takes.
Is there anything that sighted journalists can do to better keep their blind audiences in mind?
I don't know, because I don't know blind writers or journalists. I know two blind friends back in Morocco who unfortunately do not like reading. So I don't know what are the things that a journalist should do or not do when they are producing work to keep their blind audience in mind. But from my firsthand experience, I have no problem accessing any type of forms of stories as long as I can read the language that the story is produced in. But yeah, I don't think there's, but when you interview a person, personally, I think different people have different preferences, but whether someone blind or deaf or able-bodied or from different cultures, different people have different ways of doing things. And I think that also applies to a way people access things. Some people would prefer maybe just audio, while other people prefer written or both, if that makes sense.
Yep. What do you envision yourself being like as a journalist in your future?
I want to bring as many journalists and nonfiction writers together as a larger group. I also want to be able to travel the world and actually not see, but like feel the places where my subjects have been to.
So you say feel it. And how do you do that within your writing?
By words, using words, asking the person to describe things. And then I have what I call a blind map. And I use it always, like when I go around to like, it's like a taking a, like a picture of thing or a place or words or any, whether if it's like a story or a space, and capturing it in my mind and just have it live there.
So I always ask the journalists that I have on, how has being a journalist shaped how you view the world?
It has made me, the person I am today, it has helped me understand a lot where other people come from. It has given me the ability to listen, which I don't think I would have otherwise, because, you know, there's this, like, we need to talk so that we can be heard. But journalism has helped me understand that, like, while we need to, like, talk, but also there are people who badly want other people to listen to them. It has helped me as a writer know how to navigate the writing process, and it has given me a tool to help other people write their stories using my journalism skills to help them by using the journalism ethics, like minimize harm, but also seek the truth and report it. And it has given me a lot of other things and opportunities, as I said earlier, to meet people from all over the world. Because I think if I weren't a journalist, I don't think I'll just reach out to someone and say, hey, I want to talk to you. There has to be a reason. But journalism is that reason. And it has given me an opportunity to let other people trust me to tell their stories.
Journalism is the reason. I like that as a phrase. How can people find your work?
Anyone can check thedatekeepers.com and or reach out to me through LinkedIn, whether Datekeepers LinkedIn and or Ito Otini LinkedIn.
And just to round out the story, why is it called The Datekeepers?
That's actually a really funny story. A lot of people reach out to me and say, are you a dating site for journalists? And I'm like, no, you got it wrong. That's, we don't do that. Maybe someone should start that. but my name is Ito and my last name is Utini. And as I said earlier, Utini is a native Moroccan name, and U means the owner of and or the keeper of, and Tini means dates, and dates here are fruits that grow in the palm tree. And my last name means the date keeper, and when I got married, my husband took my name and he became Utini number two. And when we started our company, we decided to call it the Datekeepers, basically people who own dates. And I wrote a piece and published it at the Relatable Voice magazine, where I explained that, unfortunately, we're not a dating site for journalists.
Ito Otini, the show is called The Journalism Salute. We salute you for your good work, your amazing story, and we ask that you do likewise. Is there a journalist or journalism organization that you would like to salute for their good work?
Yes, I like Nicholas Kristof I'm sure a lot of people have watched his documentaries and or read his books. I like his work, but also the fact that he also works with his wife, just like me working with my husband. And also my long-term mentor, Stephen Franklin, who is based in Chicago and has worked as a journalist all over the world.
All right. Ito Otini, thank you for taking the time to join us. Best of luck in your work. We look forward to reading your book when it is complete, and I imagine it would be possible that someday it could be a movie. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark.
To learn more about Ito's work, you can visit thedatekeepers.com. It truly is a remarkable story. Thank you for listening to the Journalism Salute. Please let us know what you think of the show. You can find us on Twitter at journalismpod, and you can email us at journalismsalute@gmail.com.